Welcome back to the Environmental Law Monitor, brought to you by Bracewell LLP's Environmental and Natural Resources Group. I'm your host, Daniel Pope. Be sure to subscribe on your preferred podcast streaming service. If you have any questions about this podcast or anything else related to the monitor, or you just need a friend, please email daniel.pope@bracewell.com. If you recall a few episodes ago, I mentioned that one of the things that we're hoping to do with the podcast is not just address the most recent developments at the federal level, but also pay attention to what's going on at state and local levels regarding environmental and natural resources regulation. To that end, I'm joined today by Whit Swift, a partner in our Austin office. He is just a couple of floors above me as we all start making our way back in. Welcome to the monitor, Whit.
Hey, thanks, Daniel. Glad to be here.
We're going to be talking today about recent developments at the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality. Whit's been paying attention to a lot of the developments there, and I think we're going to have an interesting conversation. And so I do want to jump right in with a question that I think is on the minds and indeed on the hearts of a number of our listeners, which is, Whit, when are you going to stop being a terrible fantasy football commissioner?
The moment someone else is willing to take the job.
I mean,
the most thankless job in all of officedom is the fantasy football commissioner. Yes, actually, this seems like a great opportunity for you to go on record as being willing to take that job over.
I'm trying to run this podcast, Whit, and I'd like to think I'm doing a better job of it, a more fair and just and even-handed. You know, what are we going to be dealing with for this upcoming season? Are we going to have to get like three quarterbacks or something again?
Hey, you know, when you're the commissioner, you have the opportunity to change the rules in a way that you might think makes the league a little more interesting. And I did that, and there was massive backlash from the rest of the league, I think in part because it made it different, and in part because I then won the league based on our new rules. But yeah, there was backlash, and my rule changes have been nullified for the coming season. And I'm fine with that. You know, I run a Democratic league, and my changes were voted in, and they have now been downvoted, and will go back to the drawing board.
All right. Well, you know, I'm going to make this promise to our listeners that I'm going to continue to hold Whit accountable in my role as, I mean, I guess I'm a member of the press now, but at any rate, talking about rulemaking kind of segues into our first discussion. You've been paying attention to some local rulemakings at the TCEQ regarding the topic of environmental justice. Now, I know that we've done quite a bit here at Bracewell in our practice group to cover environmental justice developments, but we've typically looked at the executive order from the Biden administration. We have looked at Title VI and Civil Rights Act, everything in between. So talk to us a little bit about what's going on at the TCEQ with their rulemaking process, which you've been paying attention to.
Yeah, sure. So we do have rule development at the TCEQ that does have an environmental justice angle to it. And it's really based on the expansion of public notice requirements with regard to publishing notice in an alternative language. So you've got, you know, when you're publishing notice of a project, say you're, you know, authorizing a new greenfield site or making a change at an existing site, and this is under permitting for air or water or other media, there are public notices that are sent out. And back in 2019, this process actually started when the Sierra Club and an environmental justice advocacy group submitted a petition for rulemaking to the TCEQ about expanding the alternative language notice requirements. There have been some requirements to publish alternative language notice in certain circumstances at when you're getting permits from the TCEQ. And what the TCEQ is doing right now, or what they've done, is they've proposed to expand those requirements, expand the number of notices and the types of information that'll have to be provided in an alternative language.
Well, that's kind of interesting. You said that this had started basically 2 years ago. I think when we were talking about this a little bit before the show started, I just kind of assumed that this rulemaking was a quicker rulemaking, you know, maybe an environmental NGO asked for in light of a renewed federal commitment to environmental justice, but you're saying it actually started quite some time ago.
Yeah, no, that's definitely not the case. You had this petition for rulemaking that came in 2019, and then TCEQ started a stakeholder process last year prior to the presidential election. You know, there was certainly a lot of discussion about environmental justice issues during the presidential campaign last year, but this was a train that was moving before President Biden had won the election or before his administration had taken over.
Okay, so that's interesting. Well, let's circle back to the content of the rule itself. You said that this was about alternative language notices and the type of contents that must be in those notices. It sounds like that's not necessarily about when the alternative language notice provision is triggered, but maybe how you comply with it if it is.
Right. Yeah. I think what they've proposed, so the agency went through a stakeholder process, and then they proposed rules earlier this year. Right now it's in the, I guess the public comment period is closed. The agency is considering those comments. But what the TCEQ has done is that they have always had, I don't know, I should, always might be an exaggeration, but for as long as I can remember, there has been an alternative language notice requirement in the TCEQ rules. And I do primarily air stuff, and it's triggered at two rounds, the first and the second public notice of air permits. And it's triggered when a site, either you're building a new site or you're making a change at your existing site.
And I just want to clarify something before we get too much. Sure. You said that, so your focus is primarily air. I think we all know that, but this is for any kind of permit.
Absolutely.
When the alternative language requirements are triggered. Okay.
Yes.
Got it. So not just for air.
Sure. And if the, you know, the point of, if the site that's going to discharge or the site that's going to emit air pollutants, if it's, you look at the nearby elementary and middle schools, and if the nearest elementary or middle school is required to have a bilingual program, not just like English as a second language, but a true bilingual program, then that is when you're subject to these alternative language notice requirements. And that's been the case for a long time. And that creates some challenges for folks applying for permits, because there's this analysis that you need to make to identify those schools, make sure you know what programs they offer. And then if bilingual notice is triggered, or if alternative language notice is triggered, you then have to find a suitable publication. You know, you're looking for something that's a publication of general circulation. That might not be the case. So you're finding the best publication that you can, that can, you know, that you can use, and then making sure, you know, those don't always publish. They certainly aren't publishing, or they're often not publishing every day, like the Houston Chronicle or the Dallas Morning News. So you're trying to work with their publication schedule, and they're generally smaller operations, of course. There's some complications, I guess, that are created when you trigger alternative language notice. And this change isn't changing the applicability of which sites or which projects have to do alternative language notice, but rather it extends those requirements such that if you're in a location where alternative language notice is triggered, you're going to have to do more under what the TCEQ has proposed. They've expanded beyond just this first notice and the second notice requirements. They've expanded it to where if there's going to be a public meeting, which is a public participation, you know, opportunity that the agency will hold. Frequently, they're held if they're requested by an elected official. There's also a sort of a more subjective determination that the TCEQ executive director can make based on significant public interest. They get a lot of requests for it. And a public meeting will typically be held, you know, at or near the site that is the subject of the permit application. And now if a public meeting is going to be held, there are specific requirements about, and if a public meeting is going to be held and you trigger alternative language notice, well, then the notice of that public meeting will have to be in the alternative language as well. You'll have to get it translated.
So the alternative language requirements kind of basically track through all of your public participation.
A lot. Yeah.
Is this sort of a way of simplifying it?
Yeah. But then even if you have a public meeting, you also need to provide a translator for that meeting. So it's, okay. You know, there's you know, that's going to be more involved, identifying somebody who can do that job as a, you know, not just translating the written word into a public notice, but also getting a person there who can actually translate at that meeting. It also creates, so there are several things that the applicant will have to do, at least as proposed by the TCEQ. There are also some additional things that the TCEQ executive director will have to do as far as when alternative language is triggered. And if they get comments received in an alternative language, then the agency will actually have to issue its response to comments or translate its response to comments in that alternative language as well. You know, and that's pretty significant. And some of these, especially on a big high profile project that gets a lot of comments and there are lengthy responses. I mean, you know, this could really be, and that from an applicant's perspective, that's not giving the applicant more work, but it certainly is creating additional work for the TCEQ executive director. And translating those, you know, translating that response to comments documents into whatever alternative language is triggered.
Is that just in responding to the particular comment that was lodged in an alternative language, or is it the whole comments response to comments document?
As the rule was proposed, I read it as applying to the whole RTC or response to comments. So it isn't one where they could sort of single out the particular comment or comments that they got in an alternative language and respond to those in that same language, but rather if you've got alternative language comments and your application otherwise triggers, then you're going to need to translate the entire RTC into that language. That's how I read the language that was proposed. The one other interesting, and this isn't just an alternative language thing, although it, as you said, you know, if alternative language is triggered, it would flow through. But as a public participation, as a way to boost or assist public participation, I guess you'd say, one of the proposed requirements would be when public notice is triggered, is that the applicant prepare a brief, what they call plain language summary of the proposed project. And so that summary would also have to be translated into the alternative language that was triggered for the application. But this summary as a public participation tool is not just an alternative language mechanism. Rather, this is going to be a new thing that if the TCEQ adopts what it's proposed, it would apply all, you know, whenever public notice is triggered.
And so what are the requirements right now? Obviously, there's no plain language summary. They're going to be potentially adopting that. Is it just that you receive a copy of the permit application, and then if you're sort of a lay person, environmentally speaking, you just get to wade through the technical information in there?
I think that's the idea of, you know, say you're a member of the public, you know, what you'll see is you'll see the public notice, you know, and you happen to be looking at your newspaper, you know, there are two rounds of public notice that are required, and there you essentially alert them to the existence of the project, you know, and what type of authorization it's trying to get. And you identify where a copy of the application is that is available for you to go and review in a public place. It's, you know, sometimes it's a library or a county courthouse or a TCEQ regional office if one is close by. But that's part of the public participation aspect is that there's a copy of the application out there that someone can review. But what you have here now is another assist, I guess, for public participation, particularly for folks that, you know, aren't well versed in air permitting or wastewater permitting or whatever that authorization is. And you've got this obligation, or if adopted, you'd have this obligation to prepare a short summary that identifies what the project is trying to do, you know, how it's going to change what you, you know, what you make or what you, like the power you generate at your plant, or, you know, how it's going to change the output at your particular industrial site. And then you talk about what it's going to discharge or emit and what you've done to make sure that it will be protective of public health and the environment. So there's, you know,
there's a lot to distill there into two pages.
There sure is, you know, and I imagine over time, the regulated community will get to a point where they've got a pretty routine way of describing projects and what they're doing. But there's certainly enough difference between individual projects and what you're trying to do that it won't be something that you can just pull it out. Even if you're at a, you know, if you're at a chemical plant, you can't just use your last, dust off your last one and put it out there, because, you know, the fact is, these different projects are probably affecting different production areas or different production units of the site. But that's a new, you know, you can see it as, again, it's a way to, it would be a way to enhance public participation and make, you know, understanding projects more accessible for people who aren't air permitting consultants or environmental engineers that live it, but rather, okay, well, this is really what this boils down to as far as, I see this, you know, sign that you've posted on your fence line, and I saw this advertisement in the newspaper, and there's a 300 page application sitting in the library, but where right. can I find out what's really yeah. happening here? And that's what, you know, again, and that has nothing to do with alternative language. It would, you'd have to put it out in the alternative language
if that was triggered, but this is for any public notice.
Exactly.
For a permit that you need.
Right. They've proposed it as part of the general public notice rules. So if you've got an application that triggers notice, that summary is an item that you would need. That'll be a new thing that you'll need to prepare as part of the permitting process.
Do you think there's going to be an issue down the road with, you know, project opponents looking at what's described in this two-pager plain language summary and then looking, taking a pretty thorough look at the project that's been proposed in all of its detail and saying, hey, this is a really material part of your project. You didn't include it. Go back to, you know, step one.
You know, the rule language that governs that summary document is pretty general. So hopefully it wouldn't create a real, what's the term? You know, kind of like
a hook,
a trap door yeah. or something that you'd likely stumble on. But it could be the case, and it is one where one thought I had on all of this is that even though you're not talking about the actual impact on the environment, procedural issues are, and as you know, in the work you've done, Daniel, they're very commonly used by project opponents, you know, a failure sure. on public notice, those types of things. Right. And they're, in one way, it can be simpler because you don't have to be an expert in toxicology to understand where someone messed up, right? You know, you can just say, oh, you were supposed to publish this by this date and you did not. And so it's, you know, they are a very useful tool for project opponents, holding your feet to the fire on procedural requirements. And there's no doubt that that's what this is establishing, is, you know, enhancing are the procedural requirements that you will have in all cases, especially in those cases when you've got alternative language notice triggered. And I know from working with folks, that's something that takes close attention and understanding and making sure, have we not missed an elementary school? You know, because if right. you just have somebody that quickly does it and they screw up when they're drawing the map and drawing a circle of, you know, 3,000 feet or whatever it is, and they miss an elementary school and you've missed it. And if somebody points that out, you're back to square one, you know, especially on time pressured projects. It wouldn't necessarily kill the project, but it would send you back to first notice, give everybody more opportunities to come in and request a hearing, and certainly slow down your progress.
Right.
So, yeah, I think, you know, these additional procedural requirements that look like they're coming, at least, you know, into some, maybe not exactly as proposed, but, you know, something's coming, and it will create more hurdles and certainly a number of additional items for permit applicants to pay attention to in this process.
Before we go on to the next topic in our sort of, you know, TCEQ grab bag we've got going here, you described some additional procedural requirements in connection with environmental justice, namely, you know, the expansion of public notice requirements when an alternative language notice is triggered. So we're still in the world of procedure, right? We're not getting into the world of a kind of a substantive outcome being mandated under environmental justice concepts. Is that right?
Yeah, no, I think it is one, you know, you see this, I mean, here's real action by the TCEQ on the environmental justice front but it is looking at it from a procedural side, working to enhance public participation, you know, particularly focused on environmental justice communities that may not be native, or may have at least a significant portion that aren't native English speakers. So there's certainly an EJ angle here, but it is a procedural one looking at additional participation. I think, you've heard a lot on the federal side about more substantive, I guess, trying to distinguish it between procedural and substantive, but talk about enforcement focus, right? Mm-hmm. Enforcement focus on EJ communities or to help protect EJ communities. And I think at least right now, what you see from TCEQ, this action is about, on the permitting side, this public participation aspect, not on changes to the substance or the permit review that would make it any different on an environmental justice angle. The agency has always taken the position that the way it processes permits and looks at protectiveness is, they look at the fence line or the mixing zone for a discharge, and we run it through a process to ensure that it is protective at the fence line. And that analysis is blind as to who is on the other side of the fence.
Right.
And that has kind of been the agency's answer when environmental justice issues have been raised, in permit proceedings. And it'll be interesting to see with the federal agency's focus on EJ issues, whether and how EPA might put pressure on TCEQ to either non-procedural permit review that would look at some kind of, cumulative impacts in environmental justice or, from the enforcement side. But I'm not aware of anything happening on the TCEQ side right now in the way it implements its delegated and approved programs beyond these procedural changes that it's contemplating.
Whit, then you also mentioned as we were talking about the show that there are some new and kind of interesting developments at TCEQ regarding new source review. What's going on there?
Yeah, right. As you said, and as I guess anyone listening who knows me is probably aware, I do a lot of air permitting work. And so I follow this stuff extra close. And just today, in fact, the TCEQ commissioners adopted changes to the TCEQ air permit rules that affect federal new source review applicability. And so this is...
Can you distill that?
I bet I can.
All right.
I can try.
Sweet.
So
for the uninitiated, I mean, I know what you're talking about.
Of course you do.
Just in case.
So when you're making a physical or operational change, there's federal new source review and then state or minor new source review. There's sort of two paths you can end up going down. And, if you trigger federal new source review based on the emissions that are coming, the size of the project, basically from a tons per year emissions perspective, you look at the emissions increases associated with a project and you compare them to some thresholds that EPA right. has established. And then it looks at whether it's in a...
So, and this is for a new project. This is for significant, or I guess, major modification. Yeah. Of an existing facility, then you're in new source review, NSR,
Right. So, So you're looking at So this is really relates to test or the analysis that you do of a project to trigger whether it goes on that federal new source review ramp or it stays down in the state minor new source review ramp. And what TCEQ adopted today were changes to its air permitting rules that affect the first step in this analysis, which is where you look at the emissions changes from this project and you compare those emissions changes to those EPA defined thresholds. And what the change that TCEQ adopted today makes it clear that in this first step, you look at both the emissions increases and the emissions decreases associated with this project in order to determine whether that net of those two, you aggregate them, and whether combining them, the emissions increase is still greater than the major modification threshold.
You had mentioned that this was an initiative under the previous Trump administration at the federal level that's now being codified at the state level.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting because this is one, you know, during the Trump administration, there wasn't any sort of major federal NSR overhaul, but our colleague Jeff Homestead described them as singles and doubles as opposed to trying to hit a home run, where the administration made a number of changes to try to streamline or improve the federal NSR process. And one of them was this change that the TCEQ is now making, which is to allow this netting or project emissions accounting at that first step of the process. You know, previously, EPA had interpreted it to say, okay, you're only going to look at the increases and not those decreases. You know, and that was a way to interpret in a way that would obviously bring more projects into new source review. And because you're looking at emissions increases without regard to decreases to see if you exceed that threshold. And the Trump EPA a few years ago, I think 2018, had issued a guidance document saying, no, at this first step, we think you can, you know, look at both increases and decreases to determine applicability, to determine whether you trigger federal NSR. And then they followed that up with a rule change that was adopted as a final rule in October of last year, I believe, that codified that said, okay, for this first step in the NSR applicability process, you're going to look at increases and decreases. And so that was adopted late in the Trump administration era. And then what you had was you had TCEQ rules that were actually inconsistent with that aspect of the new source review program as EPA had changed it. And so
they were just looking still at only the increases.
Right.
At the state level, even though EPA was looking at decreases as well. And I guess the policy idea behind that was maybe even to incentivize certain emissions reductions so that you could kind of within your facility evade new source review.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. No, there's no doubt. And that's what a policy argument behind this change was. By having this, we're incentivizing applicants to find aspects of a project or to add aspects to a project that would allow them to avoid NSR applicability there at step one. You know, let's replace an old inefficient heater with something newer and, you know, lower emitting. It would add cost, but if it could help us avoid going through the additional steps associated with federal new source review permitting, then let's encourage folks to do so. And so, you know, there's the real policy incentive. But yeah, so what you had was you had the TCEQ taking action to, you know, at the time the TCEQ started working on this, it was still an EPA policy. But while this rulemaking was underway at the state level, the federal rulemaking happened. And so now you have TCEQ changing its state air permit rules, you know, to make them consistent with what was adopted in late 2020 by the last administration in its federal air permitting rules.
So the EPA of today, under the Biden administration, I would imagine may not be the biggest fan of the Trump era rulemaking, right? So how does that work? Walk us through, you know, now that TCEQ has adopted the current federal rule, like that's the rule federal and state now. But are there any potential risks for the TCEQ rulemaking if EPA decides, as it's done with other Trump regulations and Trump initiatives, to kind of distance itself from the, I guess, the net emissions rule? Are there any risks for our rule here in Texas?
It's an interesting issue because, you know, at least when I've heard what I've read and what I've heard our colleagues talk about as far as the current EPA administration's focus is, you know, the environmental justice issues and the climate issues and less, you know, or at least not some laser focus on undoing all of these NSR changes, those singles and doubles that were made by the prior administration. And so, yeah, even if this administration may not have been seeking out this change, you know, I don't know that it's clear that they're going to go out and reconsider it and undo it themselves. There's also judicial review of that, of, you know, there's another aspect of, you know, there has been a judicial challenge of the rule, the EPA rule that was adopted back in October of last year, you know, but I think as far as how EPA currently views it, it's interesting because TCEQ will presumably, with this adoption that they made today, they're going to send a proposed change to the state implementation plan up to EPA for approval. And EPA is in a position of, I guess I don't see how they could, you know, deny the requested change to the Texas SIP because it's being made consistent with how the federal rules read right now.
You kind of have it like a pot calling the kettle black kind of problem there.
I mean, unless they were to go through and again, reconsider that rule and change it, what the TCEQ is doing at this point is making its rule consistent with federal requirements. And there, with the judicial review, I guess there is some risk ultimately there that you could have, you know, the rule that this is making the state rules consistent with, that rule change could be undone. But at least right now, I haven't seen anything in the trade press or heard anything from our colleagues that would give EPA a basis for not processing this as an acceptable change to the Texas SIP. But it's an interesting issue, and it particularly with the change in administration, it is an interesting one, and it creates, I mean, it's just not quite as straightforward as it would have been if this was all happening while Trump was still in office. I did beg Daniel to let me add one thing here because there was something that was pretty rare that happened at the TCEQ agenda meeting today. And, you know, these are the usually twice monthly meetings where the commissioners meet and make the formal decisions on contested permit actions and enforcement actions and proposed rules and the like. And today there was a real interesting case that came up, and two rare things. One, of the three commissioners, they weren't unanimous in their decision. There was a 2-1 decision, but I think even rarer, the commissioners voted to deny an air permit that had gone through a contested case hearing. And that is a pretty rare occurrence here. And it was really fascinating. You know, there certainly are cases that come through where the administrative law judge, proposes to deny a permit application, but the number of cases where the agency actually chooses to deny the permit are, in my view, pretty rare. And that's exactly what happened today, is they voted 2-1 to deny this permit and deny the authorization for a concrete batch plant. So the TCEQ has denied this permit application today, or this authorization under the concrete batch plant standard permit today. And, it is fascinating. I'll spare you all the procedural and substantive details, I guess, of it, but a couple things that were real interesting that caught me. You know, one was, this was a really interesting case of the protestants identifying a legal argument that just had not been raised previously. And they actually identified a deficiency in the standard permit itself that had been there since 2012. I mean, we did a concrete batch plant standard permit contested case hearing a few years ago. And I guess we were just lucky that the protestants didn't raise it then, because these protestants raised it and it actually won the case for them. But there was some language that the TCEQ had inadvertently dropped from the standard permit when it had reauthorized it in 2012. And that language had been there ever since. And that was the Achilles heel, or the fatal flaw, that really led to the successful challenge by these protestants. So it was, you know, interesting. I guess a lesson there is, to those of you getting an authorization under a standard permit, in some ways it seems kind of simple. You just want to make sure you meet the requirements of the standard permit. And here's one where a close analysis of the standard permit itself identified that fatal flaw, as opposed to your demonstration that you meet the four corners of the standard permit. There's some really kind of, I'm still trying to reconcile how the TCEQ's denial of this permit authorization today, how to reconcile that with the fact that there are, I don't know how many other batch plants out there operating now under the same authorization or approval under the same standard permit that was just the basis of today's denial. That's just yet another, you know, interesting wrinkle to this. But I thought, you know, this is a rare occurrence that you have the agency, you know, not vote unanimous and deny a permit application that had come up through the contested case hearing process. And so I thought it was worth mentioning.
You have all the enthusiasm of like a member of the Audubon Society who just saw like a rare bird. Well, thank you for providing that grab bag update. We're definitely going to be doing this again. And I promise you that actually was Whit Swift. I don't know if it's his microphone or my headphones, or he's secretly been taking like quite a large amount of human growth hormone, but he does sound deeper to me. But I promise you that was him, and we are going to be having him back. In the meantime, thank you for listening. Be sure to subscribe, reach out if you have questions, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks very much.